Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hayward hits it down the left field line, slicing. That ball is going to be a fair ball up against the wall. Jason Hayward has a leadoff double. Javier Baez now representing the tying tally. The 1-2 pitch from Kinsler to Baez. Strike three called on the outside corner, out number one.
Joe Ostrowski, Knights on 670 The Score.
I'm just imagining Sean Anderson in the Downtown Score studios, which I have not been to since March, just looking for any random negative play from Javi Baez, and there were a lot of them in 2020. Welcome on in here for a full 4 hours this evening. Only had 1 hour before Monday Night Football last night. You're stuck with me 6 to 10 tonight and also tomorrow. A lot going on. There's a few things as I thought more about what Theo Epstein had to say, and it felt like, yeah, he talked, but he didn't say anything. I'll tell you why that's the right thing. That was the right move for Theo Epstein, even though a lot of it we've heard before. Get to that in just a quick second. Brandon Robinson, he is a former college safety, does a Bears podcast on the X's and O's of the game. He's going to join me at 6:40, Brandon Robinson. He's a terrific follow on Twitter. He breaks down the film just like Olin Kreutz does on Twitter. It's fantastic stuff. 7 o'clock, Russ Dorsey from the Sun-Times covers the Cubs. He will drop by. Our guy Jay Zawoski after the Blackhawks pick. Yeah, I wake up, not wake up. He actually texted me after my other show, BetSweats on Radio.com. Sean had texted me. I'm like, oh, yeah. The NHL season just ended, but they're having the draft tonight. The Blackhawks will pick number 17. We'll get Jay Zawoski's reaction and Score Rewind in the 9 o'clock hour. Sean, is this accurate? It felt like a long time, but I didn't realize that the last time you executive produced one of my shows was before the 4th of July.
Yeah, July 1st was the last time because we got this amazing drop from our guy, Michael Lombardi.
Ryan Pace, pay attention. You're a dumb
and I have it labeled and dated.
And that was the last show. Oh, man. I love that. Thank you for bringing that back. Oh, beautiful. Because I actually want to talk about Pace. I tweeted out a question about Ryan Pace. Because now Bill O'Brien's been gone for a little over 24 hours. And Bill O'Brien, the GM, got Bill O'Brien, the head coach, and the GM fired. I was just wondering, does this now mean that the worst GM in all of football resides in Chicago? And got some fun reaction that we'll get to later on in the show. But we want to start with some Cubs. And Theo Epstein giving his state of the Cubs yesterday. I brought back some of the audio last night. And understandably, a lot of the takeaways from what Theo said was really about what Theo didn't say. That we didn't learn anything. And I don't know that that's entirely accurate. I want to get to that in a quick second. But Sean, I want you to help me set this up. Because a lot of what Epstein had to say reminded me of the state of the Cubs that we had just 1 year ago. Now, you went back and you listened to a few things that he had to say about the, quote, core four. Because I don't even know if the core four is the core anymore, but that's what they refer to as the core. Was it pretty similar compared to what we heard yesterday?
Not only was it pretty similar, the things that you were looking for pretty much have the same exact length and time. So the things that he was saying in 2020 are pretty much rinse and repeat of what he was saying in 2019.
Okay, so I'd like to hear what you pulled from a year ago. What did Theo have to say about the core after the 2019 season?
All these players, these are guys we have to be open-minded about too. Trying to keep for the long term. Do you just keep them for 2 years, or do you contemplate listening on trades for them? So I look at them both the same, that they're fantastic players. I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think they're both hugely important, and it'd be hard to see them out of a Cubs uniform. But we're at a transition point, and we have to do whatever's best for the Cubs. I hope it includes both those guys.
Ooh, he said transition a lot the other day too. And he was open about that when he spoke about it yesterday. He said
nobody. It is certainly still the case that there are
nobody on the roster is untradeable, and that's always been their policy. So the next thing we have, Sean, is this from yesterday, or is this also 2019?
So I was just going to play the untouchable quote that you just referred to.
Okay, go ahead.
It is certainly still the case that there are no untouchables. You know, that's been our policy for 9 years, and I think the policy of most teams. And you know, clearly, you know, some change is warranted and necessary. We have not performed up to our expectations offensively, and especially at the most important times of year, and sort of simply hoping for a better outcome moving forward doesn't seem like a thoughtful approach. So embracing some change, even significant change, is warranted.
And you could certainly tell that was yesterday because of the mask on the Zoom call that he had. I'm one of those people that after hearing him last year and those comments that Sean just played back there, I thought there was going to be some sort of a change outside of just running it back with the manager. And they took some flyers on guys like Steven Souza, a few others, especially in the bullpen, hoping something would work, and it didn't work. They got bounce back seasons from guys like Jason Hayward and Ian Happ, but the players that they needed most did not show up. Now, going back to the point that Theo really didn't say anything yesterday, that's accurate. He didn't say anything. He talked about both sides. He made a case for keeping most of the guys, and he made a case for blowing the thing up. He didn't say that, but reading between the lines, you know what he's talking about. About breaking the core up. Now, I have no issue with Theo saying nothing yesterday. None. What we did learn, if we didn't really think about it or want to think about it before much, is Theo's gone after this year. According to everything we've heard so far, and I know we'll probably get official word later in the week after he sits down with Tom Ricketts, but he's going. And he used that word in transition a lot, but this time I think he was talking about his position, not so much the current roster. But do you really want Theo to say anything? We know he's leaving. He's going to be here one more year. Maybe Jed Hoyer is going to have more say because he's going to be the guy in that position in another year, officially. But if it's his last year, do you want him up at the podium saying, oh, we are breaking this team up. This is 3 straight years, can hit at this time, the most important time. It happened again with the same lineup, and we keep giving these guys chances. Hey, they get all the credit in the world for winning the World Series. They did it at such an early stage in their careers. But no, it's time to blow it up. We've got to make change. Change is definitely 100% happening. Do you want him saying that? I don't think you do. And do you want him making all the decisions on his way out the door? I think some of you probably don't want that either. And then if he's out there telling the world, yes, these core guys that have been great pieces to the organization, we're moving them, coming off the worst years in their entire career, where's the value? They don't have much value as is. But if Theo's telling every executive out there that they're going 100%, what's their value now? So I don't think we should be bothered by the fact that Theo didn't have much to say. Why would he? I'd be more upset if he did you know, pound his fist on the table and say, this guy's going and we're going to make all sorts of changes. Well, why? I want to hear that from the next guy. Why are you going to make all these changes? You're leaving in a year. It's a year in transition. I don't know what I'm saying. He's going to tear it down either. Should he be making that call right now? Probably not. Going all in? I don't want to hear that. And that doesn't make any sense anyways. He was trying to put a positive spin on it, and I commend him for that. But yeah, it's not working. He's not trying to fool you, but it's all out there. You saw it in the 60 games. Your most important players on the team, at least the ones with the highest ceiling. Chris Bryant, he's only out there for 34 games. Paid him $18.5 million. And Theo used war, so let's use war. He was a 0.3 war player with an OPS plus of 73. Average OPS plus. League average is 100. 27 points below league average. Rizzo, Mr. Cub, face of the team. Cub for life, right? A lot of people have talked about that over the last couple of years. Pay Rizzo. 103 OPS plus, league average. Wasn't even a one war player. 0.8 in 58 games. Sounds small sample. Nearly a third of a regular season. Not quite that, but it's up there. Average for first baseman. Schwarber. High hopes. Tore it up in the second half of the 2019 season. Negative war player. Replacement level guy. Negative 0.2. 88 OPS plus. And then the worst of the bunch, man, really. Because there are some that believe he is the untouchable guy. Chatter about $200 million. 0.6 war. 59 OPS plus. 41 points below league average. Javi Baez. If you've caught my last few shows, I've talked about it. I'm already sick of the Javi excuses. I really am. Like, they were putting it out there for the national media to talk about during the Cubs-Marlins series. That really bothered me. It really did. That he needs the crowd. A lot of players feed off the crowd. For him to be this bad, this quickly, and right before spring training was a wrap, there was a lot of conversation saying that they were getting close to a deal. And then there was no season for months and months and months. Sean, especially the last few shows, I was hoping that you were going to be working with me, because you are a guy that has a lot of Javi Baez thoughts. And I don't think this is what Baez is, but I hear people say, oh, good. Now they'll get Baez on the cheap. He's been so bad. I don't know that you want Baez on the cheap.
I think the thing, too, and like, he's been so bad, and this was his worst year statistically since his rookie year. Like, it's the only comparable year this is his rookie year. But
you know what, Sean, for all of these guys, it's the worst year since their rookie year, right?
But with Baez specifically, the whole talk is like the year that he was second in MVP. Like, that was the biggest outlier of a year when you look at it statistically. He right now, I mean, this past year, his swinging strike rate was nearly 20%, and he was making contact at 63%. Those are both the lowest since his rookie year. And this is showing that he's not a mature guy. He's a very selfish hitter. You're moving him down the lineup. This was the guy that was your MVP 2 years ago, and now he's batting sixth behind Jason Hayward, who for the past 2 years, Cubs fans have wanted to absolutely kill. And I understand that he's this great media or this great marketing tool and asset, but so is Tim Anderson, right, on the other side of town. And before they started winning this year, nobody really paid attention to Tim Anderson. Look at NBC Sports Chicago's, how the ratings have spiked now that the Sox have started winning. If you're not winning, Javi Baez doesn't matter. Javi Baez does. What are you going to market? A losing team? So him not producing basically just becomes a guy that has value because of his markability. But if he's not on a winning team, he is just going to hurt you every single time because he's a very selfish hitter.
It's year seven. So I was looking at weighted runs created plus 57 for Baez. Of all the qualified players, I'm scrolling and I'm scrolling. I had to go to the very bottom. He was, this season, he was 140th in Major League Baseball. The only players below Javi Baez which qualified for the stat were Eduardo Escobar and Nicky Lopez.
Can you name the teams that either of those guys play for if you don't look?
No. Where's Escobar now?
Escobar's the Diamondbacks, and I think Lopez is the Royals.
This is not him, but to show that this is the floor, even though it's 2020, that's scary to make any kind of long-term commitment to him.
Yeah, and there's no injury. It's not like last year where he got injured and he had the hand issue. He was fully healthy this year. There is no excuse for Javi Baez. You could say the crowd, but what is the crowd truly going to elicit from him? Like, it's going to get him all jacked up? Like, his team is trying to win games right there. That should be enough. You guys are going out in this shortened 60-game season after you just didn't make the playoffs, 2 years removed from winning the World Series. That should be enough for a professional to get up. We remember before the regular season, he was saying, oh, I didn't take it super seriously last year. Well, was he taking it seriously this year because it didn't show up in the stat sheet if he was?
Well, basically what he was saying in the offseason was, he was putting it on the manager. Like, it was Joe Maddon's fault that he wasn't ready the first few innings because he didn't force him to get the ballpark early enough. That's how I read it. And he wasn't ready. And, oh, that's on me. That's on me. It's going to be different this year. Okay, how's it different this year? Now, it's also 2020. And these wild circumstances. I'm sure in the beginning of the season, they were showing up at the ballpark. There were some guys nervous about what was going on. So many unknowns. But, man, I don't like to hear the excuses. If you're an MVP caliber player, you shouldn't have that. So now we've got, the excuse this year is the fans? No. You're a pro. You're a pro. So the big question here is, what do we do with 2020? When I was doing all those shows and we didn't have any sports, we were just waiting around for baseball to start and hoping they would have an agreement, I was thinking more of the White Sox. I wasn't thinking about the Cubs. What do we do with 2020? I wasn't sure. You've got all these young guys. It'll be good that they'll have some development. If they struggle, I'm not going to kill them. When I was talking about the White Sox. But what about the Cubs? Maybe we didn't consider it enough. And they won a lot of games. And I think there's a lot of different reasons why they won a lot of games. But now you have your best players all have their worst year. What do you do with that? I don't throw it in the garbage. I'll tell you that. It's something. So now you're going to walk into the last year of their contracts and just hope and pray that they turn it around? I don't know. Theo Epstein suggesting changing things up again. We're having that conversation again. But I also wouldn't be mad at him if he doesn't trade Bryant, Rizzo, Schwarber, Baez, because what's their value in the game right now? What are you getting for those guys? So you hope for a hot first half and then you move them at the next deadline. I don't know. I think that's the big question that we're going to talk about all offseason. Okay, both teams won a lot of games. Why did they win a lot of regular season games and then they couldn't get it done in the postseason? Was it just random? Because it was such a small sample size, the first time we had best of three series, and they just had bad luck in those two games. What are the problems here? We know the holes with the White Sox, and they have a wide open window. You can't say the same for the Cubs, and we know the issues with that roster. I don't know, man. I'm asking the question. I don't really have the answer. I don't know what you do with 2020. Where I stand, Sean, is I don't throw it in the garbage.
I don't throw it in the garbage because I think there are signs that Theo Epstein told you about in 2019. There was one thing that I texted you. I didn't end up grabbing because I could just explain it. But he said that he wants to build this roster where you have young positional players and MLB pitching. The reason that they won, the reason why they were, you know, 34 and 26 or whatever, was because of their pitching. We all know that.
Yes.
And I think that you see the organizational changes take place. Craig Kimbrell started to come back because of the organizational changes that they've made over the last offseason. You saw Yu Darvish come back. You saw Alec Mills come up and be a pretty decent starter for them. Their pitching is not only being improved by, you know, Theo Epstein's move, but also what they are doing behind the scenes. And I think what you were talking about a little bit earlier to open the show of this is a transitional period. I think Theo is the reason why Theo's talking, the reason why Theo's out there is because he's still the face. And whatever happens in the next two seasons, I don't think it's going to be good, is not going to be placed on Jed Hoyer, the guy who's going to be taking over for him, or, you know, next season, the guy who's taking over for him. But I do think that if they move a Baez or Bryant or whomever and get those young bats that they're talking about, then I think the organizational changes that they've made, where, you know, they have the hitting lab and pitching lab and all that stuff, I think that's where it's going to be able to be where Jed takes it and starts to run with it. So I do think that there's, you know, pieces in place, and I think the organizational structure has been fixed. It's just now the players and the roster, obviously COVID hurt them, their ability to move these guys. But I do think that at least Jed Hoyer in 2021, 2022 is going to be able to take it and run with this team, because you won't be having to have those Baez and Bryant questions anymore, because they're either going to be on the team or locked up.
I don't know that you're getting long-term quality bats for these guys right now. 1 year of control, and the last time they were on the diamond, they're below average players. So why would you give up a lot for those guys? Ian Happ? Does he have more value than any of these core four that we're talking about? Possibly. I want to get your thoughts on this. And also, Sean, I think there's another reason, which we probably don't want to really talk about, that both teams in town won a lot of regular season games. Phone lines are open. You can call or text 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. Talk to Russ Dorsey from the Sun-Times about the Cubs at 7 o'clock. Brandon Robinson on the Bears at 640. Time for you right now, 312-644-6767. Joe Ostrowski with you on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We have to be honest about our performance, and we have not gotten to the point with our offensive production that we expected to get to, you know, with a number of players who are really talented and have done some remarkable things in this game, MVP awards, MVP consideration, all-star, you know, consistent offensive performance by certain guys at a really high level. And to have the year we had this year, like we have to own that. Just, we expected our offense and our core position group to be our strength as guys are 27, 28 years old, you know, some guys 30, 31. We expected it to be a strength, and it hasn't. So we have to be honest about that.
Theo Epstein during his State of the Cubs with the Cubs media yesterday. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. And we were going over the pitching being the reason that the Cubs won, obviously, with their best players, their best position players, all having career-worst seasons. And so now they're kind of stuck. And those guys don't have much value. And because they were winning so many games, they couldn't move any of them at the trade deadline. They had to make little tweaks and add a little bit, even though the front office, if they're being honest about things, they knew they weren't in for a deep run this postseason unless they got extremely lucky on multiple fronts. And the other reason that they won a lot of regular season games, what was the thing that most people were ripping the White Sox about? If you had something negative to say about the Sox, it was, oh, look how they're eating against the bad teams in the Central. Well, the Cubs played against the two Centrals as well, arguably the two worst divisions in all of baseball. And the National League Central hasn't had that second really, really good team, good to great team. Like, you see it right now in the West with the Dodgers and the Padres. Your champion last year with the Nationals, where's the other team? The Cardinals are good at times. Brewers good at times. But not a real threat. Not a real, real hardcore threat. Not at that elite level. We haven't seen that from those teams. Keep in mind, obviously, this season, crazy 2020 year, that's all you were playing. You were playing the two Centrals. So they had such a big advantage. So probably the regular season record fooled us a little bit. If you weren't looking at that. 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. Love to see a lot of you guys fired up and you're on hold on the phone line, so I want to squeeze you in. Let's go to Bloomington. James, you're on 670 The Score.
Hey, guys. Huge Cub fan. Super disappointed. It's not about 2020, though. You know what it's about? It's about what's happened to the Cubs since they won the World Series in 2016. This stuff is unprecedented. They had five key core players who were headed into their prime. We're talking about Baez and Bryan and Rizzo, Schwarber and Contreras. All of them, every single one of them has regressed since 2016. When in the history of baseball has that ever happened where you have five key guys who were all on the verge of superstardom and they all fall flat? They are all worse baseball players today than they were in 2016, every single one of them. So is that the players' fault or is that the developmental system of the Cubs' fault? Because how can they all fail at the same time at the same level? Second thing, bad trades. That's on Theo and Jed. You trade away all your prospects, your core has fell flat, and that's why you get what you had this year. It is the result of 4 years of this. And I want answers, and Theo should be talking about that because he's responsible for hiring the people to develop the Cubs. He's responsible for pulling the trigger on these trades. So he needs to talk about that to Cub fans like myself.
I feel your frustration, James. Let's talk about Albert Almora. What went wrong there? That was your first pick. It took you how long to figure out that he can't play? How long did it take? And he's not alone. There have been a lot of issues. Look at these top picks. We thought we're going to be here for a decade. Before it was, oh, look at all these guys that are up at the same time. I hope they can keep a couple of them. Well, now you would think if they want, they can keep all of them. But is that what you really want to do? The economics of the game, I don't. Who knows where it is a year from now? Kevin and Wheaton, you're on 670 The Score with Joe Ostrowski. Hey, Kevin. Oh, Kevin's gone? Let's go to Asher in Deerfield. What's up, Asher?
Hi. Yeah, so this year, you know, I know they said 60-game season. You know, some players are acting like it doesn't matter. You know, I heard David Ross say before the last game, he was like, you know, before they got eliminated, I'm not even looking at it like an elimination game. And you know what? They should be looking at it like an elimination game. They were going to get eliminated, and they just haven't been focusing on their hitting. They didn't lock up Nick Castellanos last year, which was such a bad decision. And Daniel Murphy the year before that. They've been making such terrible moves in the offseason besides small move, or besides, well, I guess big moves like Yu Darvish, and they got Craig Kimbrell midseason last year, and you know he was terrible for like half a season, And, you know, he's good now, but that's good for pitching. But what have they done for hitting?
Yeah, I got you, man. Thank you so much. Appreciate the phone call, Asher. Castellanos, yeah, just looking at his numbers this year, I know what we remember and the jolt that he gave that offense for an entire month. It was terrific in 2019, and it felt like it was just him and Schwarber on an island, the only ones hitting. And if we were to look back and examine the numbers, that'd probably be the case. But we got to look at what Castellanos did in his age 28 season.
As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run.
The heart of his prime, too. He falls right in line with these Cubs. Sean, he was a negative 0.2 WAR player matching Kyle Schwarber. So, same thing. So now, another case. This is something where we're going to, man, I don't know. I don't know that anybody truly knows the right answer. Is it more of just a wash? And then you move on and look at the career numbers instead of what happened in the 60-game sample.
I think with some of them, you have to. Like, I mean, Bryant was dealing with injuries. And, I mean, you saw last year, he wasn't as bad as this. I mean, you saw the end of the season, it seemed like he was kind of coming back. So, like, he would be the one guy that I think all the tools are there. I think he knows how to play. He knows how to attack. I think Bryant and Rizzo are the two guys that I feel most comfortable with, at least sticking around. I'm not a Cubs fan, though, so I can't really. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But then, right. Contreras, like, you don't need a top level catcher. He's very good. I think he's probably the best one out of the four this year, but you don't need a top of the line catcher. And then with Baez, I mean, I think I made my clear point about that one.
Yeah. It's funny how the narrative changes. Before with Contreras, it was so great. We were going to have him for a longer period of time, and you have such an advantage over the rest of the game because you have one of the few catchers that can hit, and he doesn't have to be back there every day. You can have his stick in the lineup. Now you have the DH, or he can even play the outfield from time to time. It's great. And now we're looking at it and saying, maybe you should attack that position in a different way. Tyler up in Wisconsin, now on 670 The Score. What's up, Tyler?
Hey, guys. I just want to kind of ask you guys a question about this. So we all know it's Theo's last year, and there's a bunch of other expiring contracts. And he says that you're going to win with MLB pitching and young position players. Good thing for us is our number one prospect is a left-handed pitcher that throws about 100 miles an hour. And our number two prospect is that catcher, Amaya. What's to say we don't package Braylon Marquez and Wilson Contreras into a top-level position player, maybe sign Trevor Bauer. I don't know if they'll have the money for that, sure, but try to get one more arm in free agency and then try to get one more bat. Just want to hear what you guys think about that.
Thanks for the phone call, Tyler. I don't see it. They know what they have right now. And is this the time to start spending? They're letting guys behind the scenes go. Like, Tom Ricketts was talking about it before they started baseball, about the impact of the economics. Haven't made that money up yet. I would be floored if they were to go into free agency this winter or whenever free agency is. And they were to spend. That would shock me. I understand the thought. Last season with this group, just go all in, and then you end up blowing it up after that. I get the premise, but I don't see any way that happens. You see it, Sean?
No. I mean,
there's no way.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a guy out there. Like I said, I think this is a transitional year. You're not going to spend a ton of money unless it is a one-year deal, and we heard that Bauer wants those. So if they make a very lucrative offer to Bauer, I think that could be it. But I think if they're going to address any need, it's going to be offensively.
Yeah, it's a perfect time to reset as an organization. And if you go in, you have Bauer, and you have three studs, how much does your pitching matter? I mean, your hitting, rather. If you have Darvish and Hendricks, they give you that again, and then you add Bauer to that, okay. That is a game changer.
That's pretty 2019 Nationals-ish.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm thinking.
You got an all-star third baseman who's about to leave. You got, you know, a decent shortstop in Javi Baez and Trey Turner. You know, there's some similarities.
Yeah, you don't have those young stud outfielders, though. Yeah. There's a comp. You don't have a bullpen, too, just like the Nationals going into that year. Fascinating to watch. I'd be surprised if that were to happen. Yeah, I won't even say maybe, because just based on what Ricketts has said, I really don't see that happening. And Bauer's going to get paid. We'll get back to the Cubs at 7 o'clock. Russ Dorsey from the Chicago Sun-Times will drop by. Coming up next, we'll talk some Bears X's and O's with Brandon Robinson next. I'm Joe Ostrowski on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
And the Colts going to leave Soldier Field with a nice road victory, playing very stingy defense and just enough offense to be dangerous. And a 19-11 win over the Bears.
Jeff Joniak with the final call on our sister station, 105.9 Bears Radio. This is Joe Ostrowski with you. Sports Radio 670, The Score. Let's chat some Bears. Let's talk to Brandon Robinson at BRobNFL, co-host of Rule of Three, Bears X's and O's podcast on Windy City Gridiron, former college football safety at BRobNFL. Brandon, I know you've been absolutely killing it in the sports betting space, so hopefully we'll get to that. But let's start with some Bears conversation. Big picture, I want to dive into Nick Foles and how these rookies are looking so far. It was pretty intriguing, the usage of the wide receivers on Sunday in Foles' first start. But big picture-wise, first quarter of the season is a wrap. What are your overall thoughts on the 3-1 Bears?
Overall thoughts is just, thank God Nick Foles, and we don't have to deal with Mitch Trubisky anymore. After all these years of dealing with Mitch and hoping a new quarterback comes in, I mean, it's just I'm just happy to see anybody else besides Mitch. It could be Tariq Cohen back there throwing the ball for all I care. So the defense is playing well, but we'd like to see more from the offense, obviously.
Yeah, some nice red zone stops from the defense against the Colts on Sunday. Unfortunately, a couple missed opportunities, like Khalil Mack wasn't able to get that interception right outside of the red zone. Maybe that could have turned into a nice scoring opportunity. What did you think of Foles' first start? Because naturally, what you're going to hear after that game, when they couldn't do anything offensively until the last couple minutes of the game, or they just couldn't finish off drives, was, well, Mitch could do that. Oh, here's the Nick Foles we know about. When the opponents are preparing for him, he isn't as good as he is coming off the bench.
Well, to be totally honest with you, I wasn't very optimistic coming into the game because of what they've been running so far this season, how they've been using their tight ends and using so much under the center. And now you're playing the Colts, who have a really good defense. I just thought it was a terrible matchup. And then I was hoping that they would run a lot of shotgun. You'd see a lot of outside zone RPOs, and that's just not what they did. They ran a lot of 12 personnel. They ran a lot of 13 personnel, which is what they've been running so far this year. But it's all from under center, and that's just not – that doesn't tailor to what Nick Foles does well. He needs his feet set and ready to go to pass the ball because he's just – he's not athletic. He's just a statue back there. I mean, and they've been running the second most 13 personnel in the league, and you're doing that with bum tight ends. Like, you can't – why would you want more tight ends on the field when you don't have a single good tight end? And like 33% success rate from pass out of 13 personnel, 27% run success rate at 13 personnel. Just scrap it. Like, it's not working at all.
Where are you with Matt Nagy right now in year three? He targeted Nick Foles. This is the guy he wants. So we all knew that, and he gave Mitch Trubisky one last chance. We don't know about the conversations that were going on behind the scenes with Ryan Pace and what they agreed to do, but it's kind of perfect what he did against Atlanta. He gave Foles an entire half, and then there's no argument. You have to come back and start Foles in the following game. But, you know, there was a lot of frustration last year with Nagy not willing to adjust. Where are you with Nagy overall, and do you think he's going to make the necessary changes moving forward?
I'm on a wait-and-see mode. With Mitch still starting to begin the year, I expected that they would really change the offense to try to take away some pressure from him. But now that Nick Foles is the quarterback, they really have to change things up, and that's going to take some time. That's not just going to be a week change and expect the offense to completely change. And, I mean, they're on a short week here against the Bucks. I would expect
just absolutely nothing. I would expect disaster. Like, don't expect them to win. Don't expect the offense to score 20 points. I would expect worse than what you saw Sunday. You just have to give the offense time and give Nagy time and hope that he tailors things to what Nick Foles does well. And, I mean, that's just about what you can expect.
You said the Colts was a bad matchup. Is this this game against the Bucs on Thursday, is it a bad matchup, or is it they're just going to need time to figure some of this out?
Well, it's a better matchup because the Bucs run a lot of man coverage versus the Colts run a lot of cover two, which is five men underneath in coverage, which takes away a lot of the RPOs. And I don't know if that's why Nagy didn't run more RPOs out of shotgun. It would make sense, but I mean, that's kind of playing scared. So I think they can have more success if they run more 11 personnel and bring Anthony Miller on the field and utilize him in matchups against slot corners for the Bucs. I mean, they've been running the ball really well out of shotgun at 11 personnel, 62% success rate. I don't see why they don't run more of it.
Gotcha. Joe Ostrowski with Brandon Robinson at BRobNFL on Twitter, co-host of Rule of Three, Bears X's and O's podcast, Windy City Gridiron. Brandon, I was a little surprised to see your thoughts on Cole Kmet. Now, going into the season, I was expecting next to nothing because we know how this goes. It takes time. You don't see rookie tight ends come in and make an immediate impact. But you kind of think that the Bears already regret making this selection?
I mean, I thought they should have regretted it as soon as they picked him because it was just a reach for a need. Like, I liked Cole Kmet a decent amount coming out, but like Antoine Whitfield was like my guy, played safety. They needed the safety, and what do you know? He's balling out for the Bucs early on, and so like you know early on if a guy is going to be that guy, and you've seen the Bears, they're like they know that. You can see them finding that out because his snap count percentage has gone down every single game. And I think that's a good thing because he's looked pretty bad. So the less he's on the field, the better the offense can do.
That's not what we want to hear.
it's just the truth.
Oh man. Let's talk about your position. You just mentioned your guy was Winfield. You played safety in college. What do you think about the safety position with the Bears after four games?
I think they've played well. Eddie Jackson has come close to making a few of his spectacular plays. Obviously, that one was called back against the Giants, which you would have loved to see. That has to be one of the better return touchdowns you'll ever see from a defender, and it's just completely taken off the board. You'll never see it on a highlight reel ever. But I think they've been playing well. I've been especially surprised by Jalen Johnson. I was high on him coming out, but just having that short amount of training camp, like the expectations were just not high for him just because like it would take so much for him to do so well, but he's exceeded probably everybody's expectations except for his own. He's been playing better than Kyle Fuller. He's second in the NFL in PBUs. Like he's playing just about better than anybody else in the league at corner. It's really awesome to see.
We were going back and forth during the week, and we thought that Anthony Miller would have a decent game. I guess it was set up. He had some opportunities, but it was awful. Were you surprised even before Miller had a couple of those drops at the usage that we're seeing from Mooney?
Yes and no. The thing with Mooney is he can stress a defense vertically outside in ways that Anthony Miller can't. So when they're in 12 and 13 personnel, well, more 12 because you'll have two receivers with Allen Robinson, I would expect Mooney to be out there instead of Anthony Miller at this point. Before the season, I had no expectations for Mooney just because he's a fifth-round pick, but he's he's been amazing. He looks so good on his vertical threats, and it works so well because it opens a lot underneath that, and Anthony Miller can't do that. But if they run more 11 personnel, when you get Anthony Miller in the slot, there's a lot of things that you can do, and I thought he was open most of the first half. Foles just wasn't really looking his way. And then you kind of saw that he was pressing to make a play. His first catch, he double caught the ball because he's just trying to make a play. And then that's when he saw the next drop. And then the one over the middle of the field, Foles says that he was trying to lead him. But you could see Anthony Miller throttling down right in the middle of the zone because it was third down. And there's just that miscommunication. And I think that's just what you're going to expect early between Foles and the receivers, is that miscommunication.
So the big takeaway here is you want to see no 13 personnel, more 11, more 11 personnel. That's when they seem to have the most success.
Yeah, as much 11 personnel as we can get. I'll still keep 12 personnel on the field a decent amount as long as Cole Kmet's not out there and we get Demetrius Harris. But, yeah, more 11 personnel.
Oh, man, yeah. We want to see three wideouts out there. Demetrius Harris, third and goal, got to have it. Let me throw to Demetrius Harris. I was like, oh, man, that was very frustrating the other day.
Not ideal.
Yeah, man. Help us learn a little bit. You have been killing it on UFC and NFL player props. Teach us something. Help us. What are you looking for when you find player props to bet on?
Mostly early on, I'm looking for positive regression because you'll see a lot of guys that are getting a lot of targets and they're not getting a lot of catches necessarily. And usually you'll tend to see those targets be consistent. So eventually those catches are going to turn around. And the thing is, with the market on player props, they're usually based on averages. Like Jamison Crowder was the guy I was really high on last Thursday Night Football. And that's yes. Because his player prop was only 4.5 with some juice. And you just put in his averages from last year, his average catches were 4.8. They're literally just plugging that in regardless of matchups. And the Broncos gave up the second most catches to wide receivers going into that game. So I just thought and he had 13 targets the first week and then he was out. So there is just tremendous value there. And those are ways that you can get value. Unfortunately, I think Montgomery will be a great undervalue because the Bucs have been so great against the run this year. And if we know anything about Matt Nagy, is you stop the run against him early, he's going to pass the ball as much as possible. So I think that's something that you could see.
If it's in the high 60s, would you go under on Montgomery?
Oh, I would go under 59. 59, Oof. Between 55 and 59. High 60s, we're looking at substantial units being placed on the under, probably 30, honestly. I talked to you about it today. I'm just waiting for that number to come out just so I can get to it as quickly as possible.
And you think game script is going to hurt them? Bears will be trailing, and it's going to be a lot of passing.
Well, not necessarily game script, just because, like, as of now, the Bucks have four receivers out. Like, their top four receivers, I don't really know who they're going to be trying out. I just think this is going to be a low-scoring game overall. I think the Bucks are going to run the ball a lot just because they have no one to throw to. And, I mean, the Bears' offense, you can't really expect much. And you're going against arguably the best front seven in football, and they play more aggressive than anybody else. They love to stack the box. I know we got burned on Anthony Miller last, but I will be going back to the well as long as it's under 30, because we're gonna see a lot of man coverage, and that's going to tailor to what Anthony Miller does well. He's great at attacking leverage against opposing cornerbacks and man coverage.
Okay. Not a terrible spot after a bad game. I could see him blow it up. We've seen that before. Brandon Robinson at BRobNFL on Twitter, co-host of Rule of Three Bears X's and O's podcast on Windy City Gridiron. Thank you, Brandon. Good stuff.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it.
You got it, man. Brandon Robinson, he's not too thrilled about Thursday. Low-scoring affair, but I'll tell you, I would not lay it with the Bucks. I think this line, it went from 3 before Sunday's game to now 5.5, 6. That's a big jump. We're going to get back to the Cubs conversation next. Russ Dorsey from the Sun-Times will join me. We'll get his thoughts on Theo Epstein's quotes from the State of the Cubs media session that he had and what they're going to do this upcoming offseason. Joe Osho, 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.